I'm going to present the paper, A Case for Parallelizing Web Pages. I'm Hao Hui, and this is joint research work done with Xiao Tang, Sam King, Colleen, and Pablo. I would like to start my presentation with a little experiment that Google did. So Google folks want to try out or figure out the relationship between the performance of webs and how many daily search that each user would do. So what they did was they ingest some amount of latency, like 200 milliseconds, either 400 milliseconds. So what they find out was that after 6 weeks, they are seeing like somewhere like 0.7% of reduction of daily searches. Well, you might think that is not a big of a deal at all, but if you think about or consider the scale of Google, that's projected to 200 million revenue loss per year. And it takes 2 weeks until the search rate is recovered. Microsoft and Facebook did similar experiment, and they got similar results. Okay, bumping up one level, we are seeing two things happening in today's computing system. One is we got multi-core chips in today's mobile phones, tablet, and all the mobile device. Second, the cost of public cloud computing is becoming affordable. So the question is, can we combine them together and get a faster web browser? We did our prototype, and in the rest of the talk, I'm going to go through the overview of the system, which is called Android, and I will walk you through the design challenge and the evaluation, then I'll conclude. So here's roughly a 10,000 feet of view that how our system, Android system, looks like. We got Android browser running on a client, and we got Android server sitting in the cloud. So think of an example that a user wants to access a web page. So now the browser sends the request to the Android server directly. The server will request the web page on the real server based on the behalf of the browser. So now it gets a page back. And then the important step is the server will try to decompose the page into fragments, or I'm going to call them mini pages in the rest of the talk. The key, when you actually decompose the page, they are web pages, and then the server will send all these pages back to the browser. The important thing is the browser is going to process all these mini pages simultaneously, so you got parallelism here. So at the end of the day, that the browser will try to aggregate all these mini pages together so that the user will see exactly the same page. To get a better feeling of how this thing works, let me present a real-world example. Like here is the main page or the home page of the Wikipedia. So assuming the server got the page back, so here is one possible decomposition that the server could make. So in this case, the server tried to decompose the page into four parts. Then it will send all these four mini pages back to the client. Make sure, once again, they are processed in parallel. And then the browser would actually put all these four pages back together, respecting their layout and all kinds of things. And then at the end, all these red boxes disappear because this only represents the boundary that of the mini pages. So this is the real result that a user would actually look. So it's exactly the same as it used to be. There's a couple advantages for this design. First, it improves performance. Second, it's really easy to adopt in current browser implementation because there's, as you can see at the rest of the talk, this is really minimal. There's only really minimal modification you need to do in order to implement the system. And third, it maintained the current web app semantics so that all the legacy web app can run directly. Both user and web developer won't notice there's changes except that you get better performance. Okay. So before I walk through the technical details, I would like to make sure everybody's on the same page. So I like to quickly describe how a browser works. For example, you open up browser and then you see a page, hello, and with an image around. What happened on the server side is the server will send you something called HTML. Basically, it's just a couple of tags and it's human readable. As you can see that there's a hello in the text and there's a tag called image that shows that I should request an image when I display the web page. Internally, the browser would parse all this HTML into something called DOM, Document Object Model. So basically, it will try to organize all these tags into a tree. So as you see that the tag body contains things like P and the image tag and so forth and so on. One thing to make it clear is DOM is the core data structure that used in many components of web browsers. For example, JavaScript. So here's a little bit of JavaScript trying to modify the tags. So what happens is it calls getElementById, which finds out the tag that has particular ID, which is bar here. And the browser implementation will try to look into the DOM and find out the tag or the object, return a reference. And the next line, it will change the tags into what you need to do. So at the end of the day, you will see that the layout or other components of browser will actually respect the changes of DOM. Then you got a different page in your web browser or on your screen. So the key takeaway point here is DOM is the core data structure. So in order to do things like separating pages into many pages, this is the core question that we have to deal with. Okay. So I'm going to talk about design challenge here. Fundamentally, because now we have a couple mini pages rather than one single pages, so things are becoming distributed, and compatibility is going to be the real question here. So we got a couple of things. We want JavaScript and DOM compatibility. Basically means that web developer shouldn't need to change anything in order to adopt our system. And we got visual compatibility. We want the user won't notice there's any difference except that the performance is better. And how to reduce synchronization overhead because you got many distributed processes. Okay. So the key question of JavaScript and DOM compatibility is we got distributed states for DOM and JavaScript. Well, there's many approaches that we can deal with. The approach we choose is we use only one single page, which is called a main page, to execute JavaScript. And when you try to access the distributed state that happens inside the other mini pages, we merge them back on demand. Here's an example of how it works. So you got the page is exactly shown as a couple slides before. You got a hello, you got an icon. The red line is showing that these two are two mini pages. So the DOM tree might look like this. So the left part is the DOM of the main. So you got body, you got containing an image. And the right part is the DOM tree for the text. So there's the hello here. Oh. So now you got something like the JavaScript, just I mentioned it before. You get getElementById and I'm trying to change the inner text. So what happened here? So when the browser see the getElementById call, that is actually execute something like this. For example, for it tried to ask every mini pages, do you have this element? okay? So once it finds out, well, a mini page say A actually did have this element, it fetched the DOM and it merged it back to the original state. So now the DOM tree would look like exactly the same as if the pages never got decomposed. So now you can resume your execution of a user-level JavaScript, and basically you can do whatever you want because the DOM is exactly the same and the program hasn't been changed. Okay. So for visual compatibility, it means that the user should see exactly the same page and interact with it in the same way. So the solution we have is we use one main page to resemble all the mini pages together into its displays and respect their layout. And when you try to click on something, that we route events to correspond to mini pages. Here is another example of how it works. Consider the user clicks somewhere on a page, and then the main page actually figure out that it's a mouse click event, but it happened in the mini page. So the event would send into the mini page would process it, and at the end of the day, it might figure out, well, this is a DOM on click event that happens, I should do something. Say a JavaScript. So the event of the DOM event is rerouted back to the main page and execute a JavaScript. So this is the reason why we're routing back, because we're executing all the JavaScript in the main page. So now everything basically works as if things never got changed. Okay. So the last challenge I'm going to talk about is how to reduce overhead. So the initial profiling, we are seeing more than 1,000 IPC calls for just the get element by ID. So what happened is because we have to ask every mini pages on every get element by ID call, do you have this page? Do you have this element, sorry? So this turns out to be quite a bit of overhead. So the solution we got is we try to pre-compute the data structure to cache the results a little bit. We used the Bloom filter, a space-efficient data structure without any false negatives. You can see the details in the papers. There's additional challenges around how to design the server architecture to be efficient, how to design an algorithm to decompose web page, and there's a lot of ongoing work there. Okay, now I'm going to talk about the evaluations. We implement our system on top of Qt WebKit, and we evaluated 170 most popular websites according to Alexa. We ran our experiment on a quad-core ARM board, and all the pages are set up on a local network in order to get reproducible results. Here's how the results look like. For 170 web page, we have reduced the latency by 1.7 seconds. As a reference, the experiment that Google did shows that either 200 milliseconds or 400 milliseconds are meaningful. We speed up roughly 90% of sites. And the average speed up for sites is around 1.5x. To further understand why we got this speed up, we tried to did a little bit of case study. So one case study we did is the Nokia entry of Wikipedia, which happens to be in the main benchmark of the WebKit unit test case. We got reduced the latency by roughly 12 seconds, and we got 3.x speed up. To understand the effects of parallelism, we try to draw this plot. So the x-axis is the work clock, and the y-axis is the different processes. The Qt browser is the baseline benchmark we have, is an unmodified Qt WebKit browser. And main page, mini page 1, 2 are the process used in Android. The blue bar shows the performance of the Android. And the, for a reference, we use Qt browser to render the same page for mini page 1, 2, and the main page. So you can see that Android browser has some synchronization overhead, but because of parallelism, you got speed up because now the blue bars happen at the same time rather than the red bar has to happen. Everything has to execute in one single core. But one thing to notice about is if you try to add up all the blue bars together, you'll figure out that the length of the blue bar is still a little bit shorter than the Qt browser, the bar of the Qt browser, which is the top of the bar. Okay. So what happens here? To further understand why, we decompose the workload to different categories using O-profile. So we count the CPU ticks for different components, such as the JavaScript engine, Linux kernel, painting, CSS processing, and other components used in WebKit and UI toolkit. So what we see here is the browser actually has to do less work because of decompositions. So what happened is some of the algorithm is nonlinear. So if you try to decompose the page into many pages, you got smaller working sets. Then you got performance improvement because now you only have to do less work. To conclude, our early evaluation of the Android system shows that it's promising, and we think that browser developers should think about parallelizing the web page. Before I end this talk, I would like to show a little bit of video. I'm not sure that the sound is actually working, because this is actually for SAMs. So we'll see.
It's shown on the left, and the default web browser is shown on the right. So in the first part of this demo, what we're doing is compare it to the default web browser. To conduct the... This is a demonstration of a new web browser called Adrenaline. Adrenaline is shown on the left, and the default web browser is shown on the right.
Good.
So in the first part of this demo, what we're doing is clicking through a number of web pages and showing how fast Adrenaline can render pages compared to the default web browser. To conduct this experiment, we have a few mobile devices here. These are development boards for the Tegra 2 processor, which is a multi-core mobile device. And we have all of the web content hosted on a local website to take the variability out of the experiment. Each time we click, you can see the web browser on the left, the Adrenaline browser, is able to render things much faster. The reason is it's able to use the multi-core technology efficiently, whereas default web browser is not. So now we're going to run through an experiment where we let the browsers click through each website that we visited in sequence to see which one's going to finish first. As you can see, the Adrenaline web browser is finished, and the default web browser is still chunking through each of the web pages and still has a little bit to go.
I think that's it. I'm ready to take questions. Okay. Well, I would say this is actually a good question. The question is, why don't we do the decomposition, push all everything on the client? I guess one thing we actually observe is the mobile web browser is a little bit CPU bound. So if you push every computation onto the client, then you probably won't say much. Yes, or another way to answer the question is you got limited resource on your mobile device. So we think that it's a little bit better to use a server architecture to do this thing, this kind of thing.
Any other clarification questions? Can the pages overlap? Can you have, say, a background image or something on one mini page and another mini page over that?
So the question, let me try to rephrase the question a little bit. So the question is, how do you, if I understand correctly, is can you have all this kind of fancy layout or rendering perspective, right?
Yes, I get it.
Okay, so the way we implement it is like we implement MiniPage as a plugin. So the plugin actually is a process, and the content of the plugin is a web browser. So everything that the browser can respect, can lay out a plugin such as put it in somewhere, put it in a floating plane, then all the kind of things that we can do. Okay, so the question is how the request is divided between the server and the real remote server. Is it what you're asking?
I guess I have two questions. That's the first
one. Okay, so I guess one way to answer it, you can think of Android servers works like today's HTTP proxy. So you get the page, processes, and things like image might still go through the direct connection between the client and the real remote server. At least this is how the implementation works for right now. But you can definitely think of other possibilities like the Opera and the Amazon Silk browser. But still, one thing I would like to say, there's a lot of ongoing work there. I'm not sure what is the best answer yet. So the question is, if I understand correctly, it's kind of does this system actually works for dynamic web app, right? I would say this is heavily depends on the characteristic of the web app. So for example, if you still get something like the really long page, that things that we tend to do a little bit better, we still get the performance, even you still have to pay the price of decompositions, because the time you save from parallelism and smaller working set actually is worth the price of paying all the going through additional server latency and all the decomposition, all kind of things. But we do see things like decomposition won't help because the page is already very fast. So, but in this case, we don't necessarily actually go through the server side. You can just fetch the page directly.
Actually, maybe this is a good time for you to join us up here. In the meantime, any more clarification questions here before we get to the discussion?
So
it kind of does the layout itself on the server at first?
Yeah, so I guess that I did not really talk about decomposition in that slide yet, but I can tell you the current implementation works is we render the whole page on the server, and we figure out the layout and figure out which is appropriate to move outside as a mini page. But this is not fundamental. I would say there's a lot of way to do it, but this is a way that we choose in our prototype. Okay. Yeah. So, let me try to rephrase the question a little bit. Okay, so the question you ask is, then isn't the network effect? So because the mini page have multiple HTTP requests, then it's kind of slow down the whole thing. Okay, so so you do have to pay the price for more networking requests. Okay, but So our evaluation shows the results for everything is cached on local network. So this is, we try to minimize the effect in our evaluation. We just focus on the CPU side. And we do have experiment on running the whole system on real network. We try to do all things like decomposition, caching on demand. And we haven't observed something we haven't observed something that addressed your concern yet. So we didn't see something that you actually ask. Okay.
Parsing the page is sufficient to decompose it. You've actually done the network latency in parallel with with the server work, and then in some sense, it washes out the latency because of that. A lot of the latencies are because of serialization, because you don't know what you need to fetch until you parse part of it. Since you've already pre-parsed it,
Are you talking about we should, do we actually cache the decomposition result on the server side? Some of them, yes. Some of them don't. So the reason, the yes part is for things like New York Times that you see a long article. Then we tend to do very well on this part. The things that we don't do well is the things like we have a lot of heavily personalized things like your Facebook page. We have to do decomposition every time.
So I guess the question is, did we look into auto-parallelizing JavaScript? And I think, so A, auto-parallelizing existing code is by itself really, really hard. And I think JavaScript is a language that makes it even harder because its semantics don't really specify very well what side effects you would have. I mean, we've seen in this in the talk we just heard that the DOM essentially is one central data structure that sequentializes and serializes everything on XS. And that's really what a lot of code XS works on. So that creates a lot of synchronization. And it's not at all obvious which accesses to the DOM synchronize what. So if you really wanted to auto-parallelize JavaScript, just tracking state probably will eat everything you could gain. That's my opinion.
And what kind of applications do you guys have in mind then for the parallel arrays? I mean, what kind of real applications? I mean, it's hard to get people that want to do particle simulation in their browsers, right? So
yeah. I mean, that's kind of an example, yeah. That's atypical for the web browser, but it's one on purpose. It's atypical to show you can do this now, right? Yeah, so other things we looked into, physics engines for games, because web games are becoming bigger and bigger, and doing real-time physics is very compute intense. So we looked into implementing a physics engine, and we saw quite some speed-ups there. Then, of course, image and video processing. So if you look at your typical Facebook today, you have your image and you want to modify it. Most of that doesn't really happen in JavaScript, but you need a plugin, or you have still your desktop application for doing image editing. So I saw this grayscale filter, which of course is a really simple example, but most of these image processing filters, we looked into liquid resizing, which is very compute intense, but it's easy to parallelize. So that really shows speed up. So there's a lot of things you would do on the server side today that you can do on the client side. Video processing, if you think of all these the entire YouTube kind of sphere of things. You want to do fancy effects on videos and all that. You want to do that on the client while it's rendering. That's where all this can come in.
I have a question for both of you. You have, the parallelism is happening in different places and so on, but it's abstracted from the amount of hardware resource available pretty well. So how do you figure out how much, like how many hardware threads or how much hardware resource to apply to a given computation? Or what do you suggest we do about that? I mean, everything that's there, I've heard that answer before. We'll take it all. On a server, that's pretty expensive. Even on a client, it's kind of ridiculous. What do you suggest?
Oh, yeah. So I guess the question is, how can I figure out what's the configuration of client, because it's the performance is so sensitive for the hardware configurations. So one thing we actually observed is if you actually apply the system to mobile device, which actually becomes the major problem because you have lack of resource.
I'm not worried about going too slow. I'm worried about going too fast. Or put another way, what's to keep you from taking 1,000 hardware threads? Either.
Yeah, I mean, it really.
The fact that they're not there is great, but I mean, what's to keep you from taking over?
So for our programming model, it's really meant at bulk compute. So we could grab every resource that's there, but we on purpose we leave that out of the programming model because it's hard to answer, right?
But who deals with that?
For us, it's the runtime, right? So because that's really client dependent, depends on the hardware you're on. But if you know the hardware, if you build your phone or you build your desktop or whatever client device you have, you can make a judgment of how much resources you're willing to offer to a parallel runtime. You can decide that on the spot on your phone, depending how much battery is left, what kind of hardware you have, right? It's a lot of things flow into that.
You're talking about a human, or are you talking about something yet to be developed?
It's probably something yet to be developed, but by a human for a specific platform. So it's not, I think, especially on the web, it's not something the programmer can do. So the programmer cannot decide, the programmer of the application cannot really decide how much resources he will have or wants to have.
Mining time's too early. Even JIT is too early, actually. It's quite dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, we are in a good spot because we JIT on the spot when we execute. So we JIT exactly at the moment when we want to run it. So at that stage, you have probably the most information you can ever have. How much informed a decision
true.
You can make.
If you're doing something repetitive after you've JITted, right, then you can actually monitor that performance. And if that changes, or if something else changes, like, you know, then you can deal with it. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think we agree. That's the benefit of being having a JIT and having all these choices.
So I've been thinking about this a lot because I've personally been exploring WebGL for a while. And WebGL provides an application developer an alternative way to exploit a fair amount of parallelism by sticking their kernel into the WebGL code. And in fact, because of the way WebGL works, you can actually extract the data back out and so forth. It's much better than old OpenGL. It's got some of the features of CUDA or OpenCL. I see a lot of game developers, you know, in the open source community exploiting that for parallel computing, like physics engines, rather than just rendering. And I'm wondering whether the parallel array thing I also see them exploiting it for optimizing browser execution, strangely enough. There's a lot of hacking. So is there hope that with the momentum behind WebGL, that these other approaches can coexist with this thing that's going to try to suck up, the resources for a different, a different theory of how you make these applications.
So I guess the question is how do you cope with coexisting with other programming models making use of the hardware at the same time? Yeah.
That's essentially my question too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's difficult, right? It's I don't think there's a good answer yet what to do. You in essence, if you want to implement this in the browser, you need a central management of your resources. Not that would exist in any browser, to my knowledge today. I would be glad to be convinced otherwise. But it's an issue, yes. So and it's especially if you are an application. So if you do numerical computations and you have your compute cluster and it's all yours, that's probably quite easy. But even if you use WebGL, I mean, another problem you have is you still have to keep the rendering of the rest of the world running. You cannot just take the entire graphics card and compute on it for 5 minutes, because your entire operating system will stall, your entire display will stall. So that's nothing unique to our approach. It's just the problem if you really put something like high-performance computing into a desktop platform where you have to compete for resources, you open up this Pandora's box.
Although, in that case, the application developers might come back to you and say, we don't want your operating system level stuff. We know how to program the balance between rendering and physics engine and stuff. Don't try to guess.
And playing music in my ears at
yeah.
the same time
yeah.
and letting me
yeah.
keyboard something, and they know how to balance all that for
well,
me.
Well, they think
no, they don't.
Well, they think they do.
No, but they're absolutely full of it. They have no idea.
Well, the ones I know actually go to all WebGL. Maybe stretching it. They do their audio in the graphics processor. They do everything. So they're doing it. Whether it works, the demos are great. That's what I'm.
Just to make your words slightly more complicated, you cannot give programmers that control in the web setting, because you cannot allow them to grab all the resources on their own choosing. You cannot trust them to know what they're doing.
It's not just
on
that.
On my Android phone, they get all the power they want. They it's just eat my battery.
Is that a good experience in your?
They have. They can do all that. There's no standard.
Another quick question, maybe? No.
Just a quick follow-up. I'm a little confused by the discussion. You guys are
I'd like to thank the speakers again.